Gore, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I'm not there. I'm in the second week of my vacation, starting to pack up to come home. And with time to introduce you to a brand new guest host, Joe Concha from The Hill, broadcasting from AM 970 Answer Studios in New York, bringing you all the latest on the return of Congress, the latest that President Trump has to say, all the tensions around the world and storm recovery. Take it away, Joe.
Thank you, Hugh Hewitt. Joe Concha playing backup QB to the great AH. Thanks for joining us this morning. Out of New York City, it's been a fun morning for me so far. Nearly ran out of gas on the way here because my wife was supposed to fill the tank and didn't. Had to neutral my way over to the gas station. That was interesting. And I've already broken a wine glass at the radio station, which was fun. So thanks for everybody for joining me today. On a serious note, this earthquake in Mexico, 7.1 magnitude. Death toll is now at 248, Associated Press is reporting. And it's going to get a lot worse because they're only going into the rubble of collapsed buildings in Mexico City and the surrounding areas there. So this is horrible stuff. And as we're looking at that, meanwhile, Category 4 hurricane. Does that sound familiar to you? First, there was Harvey in Houston and Louisiana. And then Hurricane Irma devastates Florida. They're still recovering from that. And now right behind it, we have another hurricane bearing down on Puerto Rico. San Juan is going to take a direct hit, it looks like, and we're talking 10-foot storm surges. We're talking about electricity gone for weeks, FEMA already declaring that they're going to try to get in there as quickly as possible, and these are places that simply don't have the kind of facilities to protect people in these situations. They have about 500 shelters in Puerto Rico. Is that enough for a population of San Juan or everywhere in that country? Probably not. So it just keeps on coming as far as the natural disasters are concerned. So we're going to keep an eye on that, obviously, throughout our broadcast. Joe Concha in for Hugh Hewitt. Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. We're going to have a great lineup today. I mean, we got some tremendous guests, I got to say. We got Bill O'Reilly, obviously has a new book out, Killing England. I'm sure Bill would love to just talk about Killing England. But if you've seen the interviews he's done lately with Sean Hannity or Matt Lauer yesterday on the Today Show, everybody just wants to talk about, hey, Bill, why aren't you at Fox anymore? What happened to you? What happened with those women that you paid off for sexual harassment? Did you do it just because you wanted to avoid the press, as you said, and everything that goes along with it, the collateral damage, as you called it? Was this a left-wing agenda-driven smear campaign to drive you out of Fox? So we'd love to talk Killing England. I've started reading the book, and it's a great book about the Revolutionary War, but I have a feeling with Bill we're going to be talking about his recent past in terms of being the number one cable news host on cable for 15 years, and then suddenly, within 2 weeks of a New York Times story coming out, he's gone. And now what happens next for Bill O'Reilly? We're going to be talking to him. We're talking to Sebastian Gorka, who perhaps has the greatest voice in the history of any government official. I've interviewed Sebastian twice, and it's like listening, you know, the old E.F. Hutton. When E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. When Gorka talks, you listen. So it'll be interesting to hear what's new with Sebastian Gorka, who took a new position yesterday at the MAGA, Make America Great Again Coalition. And obviously he is backing a Senate candidate in the great state of Alabama that President Trump is not backing. So a little bit of a schism there. I guess that's a word we want to use, some competition. So we'll be talking to him about that. And as obviously his experience in the White House, which was definitely interesting if you watch Sebastian Gorka during interviews with CNN and MSNBC. So that's a great guest that we have there. We have Noah Rothman, who is probably the next Charles Krauthammer. I will say that now, and you could take that to the bank. You're a cable news organization. You're a radio station. You might want to talk to Mr. Rothman about joining your organization because I think he's that good. He is that quick. He is that intelligent. He's that witty. I swear he is the next Krauthammer. So we have Noah on as well. We have the lovely Gail Trotter. You probably saw her on Media Buzz on Fox News last week of The Hill. She'll be joining us, a keen political mind. Evan Siegfried as well, a Republican strategist. So, wow, that's quite a lineup. And last but not least, of course, my editor-in-chief at The Hill, Bob Cusack. You've seen him on TV everywhere as well. Probably the most pragmatic guy in journalism. So certainly a great lineup that we have going on for you today. But the big news from a political standpoint, you have to say easily, is President Trump's speech at the UN yesterday. His first address in addressing foreign leaders and ambassadors. And boy, talk about coming out of the gate. and making an impression and doing a speech that, depending on how you voted, either you hated or you absolutely loved. I counted it up yesterday. Laura Ingraham, Mike Huckabee, John Bolton all said, not that this was the best speech of President Trump's presidency. They said it was the best speech, at least in the case of Lou Dobbs, the best speech any president has ever given at the UN. So as far as Trump supporters are concerned, you are loving what you heard yesterday. You love the fact that Kim Jong-un, the rogue dictator, the guy who Trump is now dubbed as Rocket Man, Elton John, take a bow. He got it in a tweet and then he gets into a UN speech. What are the odds on that? Kim Jong-un called out, obviously, aggressively. Venezuela called out aggressively. Socialism called out aggressively, which, you know, half the countries there are socialists. So I'm sure that was met with some gasps. And certainly Trump supporters loved it. But then there is the other side of the ledger. And that is obviously our wonderful political media that always takes a pivot to the negative, no matter what. And unfortunately, always overplays their hand, which is why their trust numbers are so low, because hyperbole is all the rage now, you know. And I think we do have a cut, Mr. Duane, of ABC's Terry Moran, who is the chief foreign correspondent for ABC. Let's play that. That's cut 24, Duane. Let's hear what he had to say about President Trump's UN speech yesterday.
The United States basically birthed the United Nations, and every American president since then has at least paid lip service to this notion of bringing the nations together under the aegis of the United Nations. This was very different. He said something, frankly, that Vladimir Putin would have said, no question about it, when he said that we do not expect diverse countries to share the same cultures, but we do expect all nations to uphold two core sovereign duties, to respect the interests of their own people and the rights of every other sovereign nation. And there are lots of dictators around the world, including Vladimir Putin, who say the same thing and will hear those words, however President Trump meant them, as a license to do what they want to their own people.
I want to follow that up with Terry Moran as well, because Terry, if you read the president's words, he said the conditions for totally destroying North Korea would be a force to defend ourselves and our allies. You could read that possibly to even open up a justification for preventive war against North Korea.
That is a potential justification, but the words totally destroying a nation of 25 million people, that borders on the threat of committing a war crime.
And that is going to be the last word for us.
Wow. Well, I'm so glad that Stephanopoulos, who was interviewing Terry Moran there, pushed back on a chief foreign correspondent saying that a U.S. president may have been committing a war crime because of rhetoric against a dictator who keeps launching missiles, who has acquired long-range ICBM capability, perhaps, and could hit the U.S. mainland, and says, if you do anything to provoke us, like, I don't know, launch a missile at Guam, we will destroy your country. And that's somehow now construed as a war crime.
Doesn't lobbing a missile over Japan count in some degrees as a war crime?
I would believe, yeah, when you want to scare the hell out of Tokyo and everybody in Japan, I would think that probably is it. But here's the thing. We heard two things during that soundbite right there, or two soundbites. One, the Putin comparison. We always got to work Russia into this somehow, right? So that's interesting. And then the hyperbole from a Terry Moran evoking fear and at the same time drawing a little attention to himself, right? I mean, that soundbite is everywhere now. And the problem is there's no precedent presented here where President Obama essentially said the same thing, that if North Korea were to do something, that our arsenal could destroy North Korea. President Obama said that. President Clinton said that. Never heard anybody accusing those guys of war crimes because of rhetoric. So that's just remarkable that the reactions to this speech that we heard yesterday were quite contrasting. When you heard Mike Huckabee just say, you know, that was the best speech that he has given. And then you go to war crimes with Terry Moran. That is quite remarkable. So but overall, you know, this seemed to be a speech basically for everyone. Everyone. That's my bottom line on that, Duane.
Yeah, the controversial side of this was Donald Trump saying we might destroy. It was an if-then statement. If they do something, this may be the way we respond. And everybody's, well, you can't do that. That's not the way to react. You can't say you're going to destroy an entire country. Well, he's not the first one to do it.
Apparently, we're supposed to respond the way that Clinton and Bush and Obama
has got us to where we are right now.
Right. So what's the definition of insanity? I think we could fill in the blank on that. Keep doing the same thing over and over again, you're going to get the same results. So Trump trying something different, and he's being bold, and good for him. This is Joe Concha playing backup QB to Hugh Hewitt on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday morning. Big, big show. More coming in just a moment. Welcome back, everybody. Joe Concha out of the bullpen for Mr. Hugh Hewitt on this Wednesday morning. Gail Trotter joins me right now. Gail Trotter is a writer on The Hill. She's also written for The Daily Caller, Town Hall. You see her on Fox Business. You see her on Fox News, NPR. You name it, she does it. Gail Trotter, who has five kids, by the way. How do you find time for all this?
I have actually six kids, Joe, and it's great to be with you, and I have a lot of energy, and that's how I have the six kids.
Two more, and you're octomom. You realize this.
Ooh, that's close. You're right.
So, hey, look, I'm going to play a clip, Gail. I wish we had more time, but we only have a couple minutes. I want to jump right into it, of President Trump yesterday at the UN. Your impressions after hearing it. Cut eight, go.
The United States has great strength and patience. But if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able. But hopefully, this will not be necessary. That's what the United Nations is all about. That's what the United Nations is for.
Okay, Gail. Some called that a war crime, the rhetoric, that it was way too strong to remotely say that North Korea, you come after us and we'll destroy you. Your thoughts?
That's right. Well, we know that President Obama said a similar thing, but without the same rhetorical flourish or determined purpose that President Obama said when he brought it up, and he said that our nuclear arsenal could destroy North Korea. And it's interesting because, certainly President Trump does not have the artistic flair of President Reagan when he called the Russians the evil empire, the Soviets. And it's interesting, too, that he calls the leader of North Korea Rocket Man, and he does not refer to him as his full name, which shows that he has absolutely no respect for this dictator of the North Korean people. Now, certainly, when he makes this comment to the United Nations, he did underscore that it would only be if we were forced to act in this way. But certainly it opens him up from criticism from the left that he is being too strong, and to go and say that it says that we could possibly commit a war crime overplays the hand of the press and the left, I would say.
He pulled a Bill Parcells. Parcells did this with Terrell Owens. He never called him Owens or Terrell Owens. He called him the receiver. Just to show, look, you're not going to come to my team and destroy because of your ego. I love that. Let me ask you a question. And this is a personal question of sorts. And you could tell me, no, I'm not going to tell you. Did you vote for Donald Trump?
Yes, I did, probably. And I think I was one of two people. No, I was one of four people maybe in Washington, D.C., where I live, who voted for Donald Trump.
And what grade would you give him so far, honestly?
I would give him an A because every morning I wake up and I'm happy that Hillary Clinton and the gangster Clinton crew is not in the White House. And I think we're seeing that more and more with her book tour, that she would have just continued the type of policies that I think take America away from freedom and opportunity for all Americans. And she would have continued to put her family's personal interests over ethical government.
Gail, I got to correct you. It's not a book tour. It's a therapy session. And every media member plays Dr. Melfi. You remember her from The Sopranos?
They
just shake their head and they go, yeah, and they agree. And no one really asks her any hard questions like, why didn't you go to Wisconsin? Hey, why didn't you campaign more than 14 days in August? Because you thought you had it wrapped up. And by the way, when people say, well, she just wrote a book because she's just trying to gin things up by blaming, it's up to 53 excuses now. Greg Jarrett of Fox News counted it up. Does she really need the money? Because at last check, the Clintons are worth more than $100 million and Chelsea's out of the house.
Right. And it's not just a therapy session for her. It's also a therapy session for the media, because you remember the New York Times, right in the height of the presidential campaign, said that they were not really going to report things objectively anymore. They were going all in for Hillary Clinton. And there was a piece about that, how they didn't think the journalistic standards applied to coverage of Donald Trump anymore. So it's a joint therapy session.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Gail. And it's never going to end, I think, for the next 3 years. Anyway, Gail, I wish we had more time, but we got to go. Follow her at GailTrotter.com on Twitter. Thank you so much, and we will talk soon. This is Joe Concha in for Hugh Hewitt on this Wednesday morning in New York City. I don't choose the music on this show, but Led Zeppelin. You could go back 40 years, and it doesn't age. It's tremendous. Thank you, producer person, for choosing Led Zeppelin as our bump. Joe Concha in for Hugh Hewitt on this Wednesday morning. Thanks so much for joining us. You want to appreciate some things right now. Appreciate your life. Go online and look at the pictures coming out of Mexico City. This earthquake, 7.1 magnitude, is horrific. President Nieto is saying that 22 bodies were found in an elementary school, 30 children still missing. 248 people is the death toll right now. It is going to go so much higher. They haven't even gotten to some buildings. There are people still trapped alive. Perhaps it is just horrendous what's going on there. And then you look over at San Juan, you look at Puerto Rico. And it is just right in the path of Hurricane Maria. 125, 150 mile an hour winds, Cat 4 storm. Puerto Rico, which was glanced only by Irma, looks like it's going to take a direct hit here. And I just don't know if that country has the capabilities in terms of shelters, in terms of rescue, in terms of all the things that we have here. Maybe we don't appreciate enough to handle this. So fortunately, FEMA has said that they will get in there as soon as they can. But again, it's not like you could drive away, maybe like in Florida, where you could get somewhere else. My friends were in Tampa. They drove to Atlanta 4 days before that hit. Fortunately, their house is okay, and Tampa didn't take that great of a hit. That doesn't work that way in Puerto Rico. Either you're on a plane or a boat, or you're stuck. And then you got to find a shelter. And there's only 500 on the entire island. And obviously, that can't fit everybody there. So pray for Puerto Rico, everybody. Obviously, this is something that is horrific, and just a month of horrific storms. Harvey, Houston, Irma, Florida, and now Maria, Mexico. And by the way, Jose, even though it's not going to hit the U.S., could cause flooding in the Northeast. My home state of New Jersey, there could be surges there. You remember Sandy a couple of years ago? Not like that, certainly, but there's going to be problems here as well up in the Northeast. So that's your latest in terms of natural disasters, which is obviously leading our news this morning. Politically, obviously, we're talking about President Trump's speech at the UN yesterday, which, you know, it varied as far as your responses. I mean, I talk about night and day. You have some members in the media calling it a war crime to threaten North Korea if, you know, they were to launch a missile or actually do anything that would provoke the U.S. to respond. And that was, of course, Terry Moran, who was the chief foreign correspondent, or is, for ABC News. And then you have Mr. John Bolton, who is our Cut 21, who actually said this was the best speech of his presidency. Can we play Cut 21? 2021.
This was the best speech of the Trump presidency, in my view. I think he was as clear and direct as it's possible to be. You listed a number of the key points that he made. I think the centerpiece of the speech was the criticism of the behavior of North Korea and Iran. And I think it's safe to say in the entire history of the United Nations, there has never been a more straightforward criticism of the behavior, the unacceptable behavior of other member states. On North Korea, the president said that if we are forced to, we will have no choice but the total destruction of North Korea. I think people will remember that. And he made what I think is a key point when you look at what our next steps might be. He said, denuclearization is the only acceptable future. And that means, in his view, we don't end this present crisis with North Korea still in possession of a nuclear weapons and ballistic missile program. On Iran, he was just as direct, as you mentioned, his criticism of the behavior of the regime toward its own people. And then he came, of course, to President Obama's nuclear deal with Iran and said, as he has said many times before, it's one of the worst, most one-sided deals in American history, an embarrassment to the country. And that, we haven't heard the
last. That says it all right there from John Bolton. It's funny, I was in a Fox News green room yesterday. It was just John Bolton and myself. And John was on before I was. We were on Lou Dobbs. And when the booker or producer comes in, he says, "Mr. Ambassador, we're ready for you." And, you know, he gets up. And then when I'm going to be on, they're like, "Concha, run. Go ahead. You're late." I'm like, "Jesus, can I get like a mister? Can I get something?" It's just not right. Anyway, Evan Siegfried, who has been in a couple of green rooms himself at Fox News and other places. We see him at MSNBC. We see him at CNN. It's because he is the author of GOP, GPS. You could get that on Amazon. He does commentary in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Daily Beast, Business Insider, and he's also a wine enthusiast. What doesn't this guy do? And I believe he's single, ladies. So just, you know, something to keep in mind. Evan Siegfried joins us on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Joe Concha filling in. How are you, sir?
I'm great. And unfortunately, you have it better than I do in green rooms. They actually call you Concha. They just are like, "Hey, you. Can we put you on?"
You're a pronoun still. I was a pronoun for a while. It sucked. But what are you going to do? Anyway, Evan, so we just played John Bolton's reaction. Are you more in the John Bolton camp, or are you more in the Terry Moran, "This speech resembled war crimes"?
I would say I'm much more in the John Bolton camp, to be honest with you. I didn't think the speech was a war crime or any sort of upsetting thing that is a crime against humanity. There were certain parts I didn't like, but on the whole, I thought it was a very good speech and probably the best of the president's career.
Did you not like Rocket Man?
Well, I thought it was just funny, the Rocket Man part. What I liked was how the president spelled out the threats from North Korea, Iran, and Venezuela. I thought his most effective line that most people are not talking about is he said the problem with Venezuela is that socialism was successfully implemented, because look what is happening there, in that they have a massive food crisis. The president there, Maduro, he just basically faked the election, in that he faked election results for himself and is only strengthening the Constitution and weakening the Congress and the will of the people. You have people eating garbage out of the street because they can't find any other food. And Maduro is the personification of why socialism is bad.
Evan Siegfried joins us. Evan, why do you think, and it's Joe Concha filling in for Hugh Hewitt, why do you think Venezuela almost gets zero play in terms of press here? It just doesn't seem like people care. Is it because it doesn't affect their lives? It's, hey, another country down in South America, who really cares? Let's worry about North Korea, or let's worry about Russia, so-called collusion with the election.
Well, I don't think that as many policymakers here are giving it as much attention. And at the same time, there are people like Bernie Sanders who might have praised Venezuela as a model to the rest of the world because of look how they've put socialism in place. I think Bernie is going to be eating his words for the rest of his life now because, you know, a year or two later, it disintegrates and people are breaking into zoos to kill the animals just so they can eat.
Wow.
And there's massive unemployment protests with hundreds, if not thousands, every day. We see police officers go rogue and try and break into courts to try and make a stand against the Maduro regime. And it's an insanely crazy situation down there.
In Venezuela, obviously, free speech, not much of an option. And I know that this is a pretty passionate topic for you. And let's talk about the U.S. for a second and the lack of free speech that we see happening here more on our college campuses. And a fascinating poll came out from the Brookings Institute yesterday, and it said that Democrats are more likely to agree with shouting over controversial speakers so they can't be heard. Listen to these numbers. 62% of Democrats agree that instead of just listening and maybe exchanging ideas, we're going to shout you down to the point where you're not going to be able to speak anymore. And by the way, that could even be a Nancy Pelosi, which we saw happen to yesterday when she was trying to speak and she got shouted down. Meanwhile, Republicans, only 39% think that shouting over controversial speakers so they can't be heard is the deal. So 62% for Democrats, 39% for Republicans. Evan, your thoughts?
I think it's a very, very sad and disturbing study that came out. When you can go out, or colleges are supposed to be places where you learn about different ideals and ideas. And while they overwhelmingly throughout the United States are fairly liberal, there was always a place for at least conservatism to be talked about, and not anything that should be viewed as anything hostile. Now, if you are conservative, you're a fascist, you somehow promote white supremacy, etc. Ben Shapiro, speaking to Berkeley last week, they closed down all the stores because they were afraid people were going to riot because apparently being a conservative is that dangerous. And it's not. It's actually very smart. It's got tons of very good values. It helps to promote freedom economically and just as of the individual, but some people can't take it. I mean, I remember Yale University last year was having a hunger strike against some sort of injustice, and the Yale University Republican Club decided to have a barbecue right next to the hunger strike to protest that, and apparently that was a microaggression, and people at Yale wanted them expelled. I went to Fordham University, where I'm actually going to be giving a speech tomorrow night.
Expensive going there, by the way. I'm sorry? One of our producers here talked about how he went to Fordham and it's something like $70,000 a year. It's scary. But I paid less, thankfully.
Their producer got hosed. but I'm speaking there tomorrow night, and there's a big controversy there right now because one of the deans there showed the resident assistants a video from Prager University. And now that dean is under investigation for the Department of Public Safety of the university for threatening the safety of the community. It was a video from PragerU.
Jeez. How do you think Free Speech Week is going to go next week at Berkeley? Let's preview this, by the way.
Asterisk.
Right, right. Well, you got Steve Bannon, who's going to speak there. You got Milo Yiannopoulos, if I never pronounced that right, is going to speak there. And Ann Coulter. What could possibly go wrong, Evan? 30 seconds.
Oh, everything's just going to reinforce the fact that while there are views that people might not agree with, that they are going to completely melt down and not have any sort of ability to cope with that. This is probably what happens where people have been raised to think that everything's going to be sunshine and lollipops for the rest of their lives and that they should be insulated from anything bad.
And who doesn't love sunshine and lollipops? Evan, thanks so much, man, for joining us early on a Wednesday morning. Appreciate it. Joe Concha in for Hugh Hewitt on this Wednesday. Let me leave you with this. 90% of students endorse the use of violence to shut down speakers. 90% of students endorse violence to shut down speakers. This is the America we live in. Joe Concha in for Hugh Hewitt. Back with more in a moment. Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Joe Concha, six man off the bench. Your backup QB out of the bullpen. Any sports analogy of somebody who comes in for somebody who actually is a starter applies here in New York. Thanks for listening. Really appreciate it. We have Noah Rothman on right now. He's an associate editor for Commentary Magazine. Noah and I worked at Mediaite way back when, and since then, his career has taken a trajectory that resembles a Kim Jong-un rocket. It just, I see the guy on Morning Joe all the time. He does Fox News. He writes, I mean, prolifically. I mean, usually he's supposed to put out a couple of columns a week. He is constant and on Twitter as well. Definitely a very interesting follow. Mr. Rothman, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for that introduction. Said behind the platinum microphone of the Hugh Hewitt Show, you've got your own story to tell, sir.
Yeah, that's true. And your check cleared, by the way, so I really appreciate that. Hey, want to talk about first the UN speech with President Trump yesterday. So, such different reactions to this one. I know that you are a staunch conservative, and you never waver in terms of your principles. And I'm sure, and you've been critical of Donald Trump, and you've praised him as well. You kind of go issue to issue. So I'd be very curious to get your take on a speech that was called the greatest of his presidency, if you listened to Lou Dobbs last night, or potentially a war crime if you listen to ABC's Terry Moran. Where do you fall on this one, Noah?
Well, I think it was, I don't know if it was the best of his presidency, because he's done pretty well at points, notably his address to the joint session of Congress in February, which I think was had the most expectations, and he outperformed them, so I'm going to go with that one. But it was also a very good speech. It was well-delivered. It was boilerplate Republican foreign policy, which is why it was so weird to hear people like Mr. Rothkopf over at Foreign Policy Magazine call it a nationalistic flop. I mean, this is really vanilla Republican extroverted foreign policy. It wasn't an interventionist speech. It wasn't neoconservative, but it was really pretty standard Republican themes as far as upholding a liberal world order, while not necessarily bending over backwards for multilateralism for its own sake, you know, sovereignty, et cetera. These were themes that any Republican would be familiar with. So I thought it was a good speech. I thought it was a return to normalcy when it comes to foreign policy and an indication that the Bannon wing doesn't really have a whole lot of influence over foreign policy anymore.
I saw Chris Saliza write that Trump was playing to his base. The exact quote was, like most speeches he gives, Trump was playing to his base. Sovereignty, tough talk, world community needs to do more, populism. I don't know if I'm on the same page on that one.
Yeah, I didn't hear that either. And just because I don't consider myself part of Trump's base, and it resonated with me, so right there, that suggestion is just a little bit off base.
What would you give, Noah, as we're, you know, 7-8 months into the presidency now, 9 actually, now that I think about it? It's been so up and down. The rhetoric, I think, gets way too much attention. The tweets get way too much attention. Just in terms of performance overall, do you think he's exceeded? I think you probably, you yourself, just by reading your stuff, didn't have the highest expectations for this president. Where do you think he is in terms of your own personal expectations? Right on par, above, or below?
Well, I have a hard time saying that the tweets get so much attention, because I think they're the almost the entire reason why this presidency is on the rocks. And it really is. It's not a presidency that's doing great.
There wouldn't be a special counsel, right, without the tweets.
We don't have a whole lot of accomplishments to talk about. And, yeah, we have a really debilitating, soul-sucking, money-sucking special counsel that's upended any administration, and upends Washington. So, the tweets are a big problem. Without tweets, you would have a much more successful presidency. If Donald Trump didn't say anything in public ever, he would have a very much more successful presidency than he has at the moment. So it is hard to divorce his penchant for flying off at the mouth, both online and off, from the problems that he's had with this presidency. The most recent event is the Charlottesville phenomenon, where we have now a big revolt, the biggest revolt among Republicans that we've seen since the Access Hollywood tape. For what? For just running off at the mouth. It really is just about Donald Trump, the man, and not his presidency in terms of policy.
What I've noticed, though, over the last couple of weeks, and there are some exceptions, but there are a lot less exceptions, that General Kelly at least seems, as chief of staff, to have reined him in a little bit more on Twitter. Rocket Man tweet aside, even though he used it in a speech, so I'm actually going to give that one a pass. But overall, I just feel like he seems to be more controlled, and that Kelly has certainly exerted a more positive influence. And I don't see as many palace intrigue leaks coming out of the White House, by the way.
Oh, yeah, no, you really don't. You have to give General Kelly a fair bit of credit. I think there's it probably just about all the reining in effort of Donald Trump is due to him. He's imposed quite a bit of discipline on the inputs that come to the president's desk and who gets to see the president and when.
And so, I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some real changes from this administration, from the Rents era. So, yeah, I think General Kelly deserves a lot of credit there.
Noah Rothman, you deserve a lot of credit for joining us here early on a Wednesday morning and waking up with a young child and still having to get to work. So I really appreciate it, man. Thanks so much. Joe Concha in for Hugh Hewitt. More at the top of the hour. We'll have more on the Mexico earthquake, which the death toll is now approaching 250, and obviously Hurricane Maria bearing down on Puerto Rico. This is Joe Concha, and for Hugh Hewitt. Stay with us.